This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodling? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Channel Lonesome Bram? Skid-a-ba-rinky-dinky-dink?
Yeah.
Skid-a-rinky-doo?
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Watch your mouth, Miss Crackly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
But something's wrong, because it's written on your face. Said it hurts so bad when I walk through the door. But you know one thing, I ain't coming back no more. Don't try to tell me things are still the same. Cause we're in love, I heard you call.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTB studios, as always. And of course, joining me here for our jaunt through history is my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode, I didn't have the sheet up, but I'm going to say 456.
That's right.
Yes, of the gold standard. 44 to 5 bills. We'll get
years.
That.
A couple years.
It'll be the Christmas special in 2020. But yeah, here we are, JR. Always a pleasure, sir. We are on the Fortnite, my friend, of the our WrestleMania weekend.
Mm-hmm. Isn't Fortnite like 2 weeks?
No, I thought it was 4 days.
No,
it's 2 weeks.
Definitely not 4 days.
So it's a half Fortnite.
Yeah, no, not even. It's like
it's a two night.
It's a third Fortnite, I guess.
We are about four days
away from the St. Mary's weekend. Yes. And yes, it is always exciting. The 12th annual St. Mary's extravaganza. And the man you heard correcting Scott Criscola is, of course, Kelly Nelson, the third Freebird in our group here. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great as always.
Okay.
Fortnite of Canada means something else. Nobody cares what you think. The moon is in a different variant in Manitoba.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. So St. Mary's week is always a good one. Always a little extra juice in the juicer down these days, and all fired up. We'll be getting ready, getting the yard ready. Had it sprayed for mosquitoes today, and weather looks good. Got the crew ready to come in. We're looking, I don't know, in the 70s right now, Scott, as far as attendees. So it's gonna.
I thought you meant temperature.
No, temperature's in the 80s, which is good too. Not in the not in the usual 95 like we've had the last few years, or 99, no. Whatever it was last year.
Yeah, we don't need dragonflies the size of 787s. So no. Hopefully that. Hopefully the spray works, and it usually does.
Yes.
Usually does. You guys do a pretty good job with that. Okay. Sometimes it just gets so humid that you just can't survive. Oh, that's what we had, a couple of years. Last year we had the day after tomorrow, with the fucking hail or whatever.
Hailing and big storm.
Or didn't we discuss that 2 weeks ago, right? What was it? The hail was last year?
Yeah, the hail was definitely. Last year we got a big storm for like 20 minutes with hail and everything else. And my last thing is just Glenn standing under the tree as it hailed around him.
I know.
And then it was, a couple of years ago I think we had the big storm right before the party started. But anyway, here we are. Inside the Vintage Vault, of course, where we usually are, as we continue our trek through 1986, Scott. And where are we tonight?
We, of course, are in the backyard, our office, JR and 33rd. So let's dive in. July 12th, 1986, from Madison Square Garden in New York City. Kelly, your desk looks nice with the little Lanny bobblehead, the Lanny bobble mustache. And on this evening, JR, we are in the other team was in a quite venerable place. The other half of the roster was at the Joyce Athletic and Convocation Center in South Bend, Indiana. So, yes, they were on the campus of the University of Notre Dame on this day.
Yes.
Here's the rest of the card. Here's that card. George Wells pinned Steve Lombardi.
Oh, God.
Tiger Chung Lee pinned Brickhouse Brown. Doc nice. Rocco pinned Jerry Valiant. Oh, they needed Touchdown Jesus to get through this show. Mike Christ. Rotundo and Danny Spivey defeated the Hart Foundation. Iron Sheik pinned Corporal Kirchner. Wow, he's really circling the bowl, huh? And Ricky Steamboat pinned Jake Roberts.
Lou Holtz is rolling over in his grave.
He's not dead. Well,
may as well be.
He's not technically dead. All right, that's where the other team is this evening, JR. What do we got for the rest of the report?
Well, since our last visit, here's what's gone down in June, June to July. Back on the 614 edition of Championship Wrestling, Paul Orndorff was a guest on the Flower Shop. During the segment, Adonis tried to stir things up, indicating that fans cheer Hogan more than Orndorff, and that Hogan's action figure and poster sells more. Orndorff indicated that he knows the fans love him, and he isn't here to sell merchandise, just to win matches. Adonis lays in a final dig that Orndorff can't even do that, since in all of the tag matches, Hogan tags in and gets the win. On 6/21, Hogan chases off Bobby Heenan from the Flower Shop to confront Adonis, telling him to stop causing trouble and that he and Orndorff are friends. The drama continued on June 28th when Orndorff confronted Heenan in the Flower Shop. Heenan offered a match with Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy, taking on Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan. Orndorff says Hogan's only a phone call away, but at the end of the episode, Orndorff had been trying to reach him, but he couldn't get a hold of Hogan. There will not be a tag match. The duo would show up on July 5th and then accept the challenge for 2 weeks out. We'll cover that in the future, and if you want to hear it in detail, you can listen to the newest Jeff Learns Wrestling from last week as well. We'll talk about that later. On the 6/23 Primetime Wrestling, Mean Gene files a report from Japan about a brand new tag team that's in training for their WWF debut. Big Machine and Giant Machine, along with Super Machine, will be joining them as well. On July 5th episode of Championship Wrestling, Gene finally meets the duo and interviews them. They indicate that they are the number one wrestlers in Japan, but can't be called number one in the world until they wrestle in the WWF. And have chosen who else but Captain Lou Albano as their manager. I wonder if Chad believes that they were number one in the world in Japan. I'll have to ask him. Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage returned to Boston Garden for a match on June 27th. Hogan got the clean win on Savage. And on 6/28 Championship Wrestling, Jack Tunney drew up the brackets for the second annual King of the Ring, which will be held at Foxborough Stadium on July 14th. Also announced at the event as a tag title match between the British Bulldogs and Dream Team inside a steel cage. Be a lot of cheating since it's in Foxborough, I'm sure. On 7/7 Primetime, Bobby Heenan casually refers to Harley Race as the king of professional wrestling, indicating he has accomplished everything there is to accomplish. And on 7/12 Championship Wrestling, Race says he has already proven himself to be the true king of wrestling in advance of the King of the Ring tournament. So I guess the handsome Harley will be no more. All right, so we will start it off with our opening match, and it's kind of a weird one here as Lanny Poffo battles Tony Atlas in a battle of two faces. Have we seen Tony lately? I think we haven't. Weird opener, like we said. Poffo,
no, he's been at the other shows. I think he's been on the other cards the last couple months.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't seen him. Poffo shares a poem, as always, and both guys actually get cheered. We open up with a lockup and trade of control by both men. Atlas uses his strength, and Poffo uses his agility. Al talks about Poffo bulking up a bit after being self-conscious about his slight build and how it's affected him in the ring. And we should, of course, note that it is Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Alfred this month, I should say. Atlas grabs a side headlock as Gorilla and Al say he talks a lot of trash, and Al thinks he speaks Swahili in the ring, whatever that means. Poffo works free. We get a big crisscross that ends with an Atlas hip toss. Poffo recovers and takes Atlas down and works the arm, but Tony twists into an armbar. Both men get to their feet and start to talk smack, getting right up into each other and trading shoves, which really fires up the crowd. Atlas slams Poffo, but Lanny comes back and takes it to the mat and then levels Atlas with a dropkick. Atlas answers with his own dropkick, and then they both dropkick at the same time and collapse. Atlas smokes Lanny with a headbutt and grabs the arm, but Lanny punches free as Al and Gorilla talk shit about Terry Garvin. Atlas hits an atomic drop, but Poffo grabs a front face lock as things continue to be chippy. Atlas powers free and clubs away, but Poffo punches right back at him until Atlas yanks him down by the arm and grinds away. Atlas takes Poffo out of the corner with a hip toss, grabs a rear chin lock, but Lanny fights free and punches away again until Atlas dodges a charge and gets a backslide for the win. Pretty fun match. Different style and format. I thought it stood out as unique and one of the better openers we've seen here. One of Atlas's best showings as well. And I like the big shit-talking part where they kind of both like, fuck this, you know, like we're going to show a little aggression. And I've noticed Lanny's continued aggressiveness throughout these shows as he moves, you know, further and further into his career. I thought it was pretty neat. So I went 2 stars on this one. What'd you think, Scott?
I went, I just lost my screen again. There we go. I went a star and a half. I was, I thought it was okay. I wouldn't say it was ridiculously solid, but actually I went a star. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't great, but I did enjoy, and I've been saying this the whole time about his aggression and about the way that, you know, the way that Atlas has been slowly kind of staying babyface, but he tries to push the envelope, but I think Poffo's better at it. Like, I wasn't sure. I'm not sure where the Gorilla and Alfred really knew where to go with this match. In fact, their announcing really was actually pretty bad, and I'll get to that in a second. But I do like Poffo's aggressiveness. I've said it for months now, and because he was used to being a heel. Like, I don't, as far as I know, and maybe you guys, you Titans guys would know, Kelly, I don't think I ever remember Tony Atlas ever working heel. So he probably would suck at it.
Yeah.
Whereas Poffo, you know, Lanny was pretty solid heel in Memphis with his brother. So he would be the natural one for the aggressiveness. But I have to say this. I don't know what the fuck Gorilla and Alfred were drinking during this first match, but they were the worst in terms of political correctness, in terms of, like, why is pretty much Alfred, who, by the way, said supple like 4 times. I can't take it. Oh, he's... 4 times he said about Lanny Poffo, Lanny is so supple. What is wrong with you?
Oh, he's got nice, milky, white, supple skin.
White, supple muscles. I don't know. But so fucking annoying. Now, there's multiple times he says, first of all, the whole Swahili thing, what does that mean? Does that mean that Tony Atlas speaks Ebonics? I mean, what is that about? And then what's with the Terry Garvin gag? What was that about? Oh, Terry Garvin, he's a little weird, huh? Was Terry Garvin behind them? I don't want to know why, but I mean, what was that about? Like, they were just so, like, out of it in this first match. Just all this weird, you know, backdoor innuendo. Yeah, I know, Terry. Now you realize, Kelly, I just said backdoor. But, you know, all this, like, you know, innuendo and everything. Like, the whole match was that. It just made no sense. Was really weird. It kind of took away from the match, to be honest with you. Your official match time was 12:35, so not bad. They were actually given a decent amount of time. I remember watching this match when I was watching the prime times from 86 when we were doing the network adventure, and I remember them talking about it. Even Bobby and Gorilla talked about it in the primetime studio, so I do remember that. And I thought, before I looked at Graham's page, that I thought one of those two guys was a sub for a heel. But no, they actually, it was a scheduled face versus face. So it was interesting. So I gave it a star. It was okay. But the announcing really kind of took away from it because it was just so bad. Just so politically incorrect and all these inside jokes. It was a mess. It was a mess early on. What'd you think, Kel?
Well, yeah, I'm in the middle. I went a star and a half. It started off pretty slow. With a lot of headlocks and arm bars, and it looked like it was sinking fast, but they picked things up. I want to go back to the intros, though. Atlas was announced by Finkel as now weighing 275 pounds.
Yeah,
that was 70 weird. Pounds. Yeah, that's strange. I mean, I guess he lost some weight, but did you have to point that out? It wasn't noticeable or anything. Yeah, it was weird. And then Poffo lost his frisbees with the airlines, lost his luggage. Thought that was hilarious. That must have been a shoot, I guess.
He could have ran to Modell's down the street and grabbed the fucking frisbee. Couldn't have been that much.
Yeah.
86, yeah. Was there even a Modell's? I guess it was Cosby's.
I was going to say it was Modell's.
I think it was Cosby's in the garden, I think. Cosby's. Back then. No, not that Cosby.
You get a free drink with every purchase.
Yeah. Yes. Come to the back room and get this Rangers jersey. Ooh. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, Lanny wasn't good at improvising, I guess. And he's back in the curtain jerker spot after a one show reprieve.
But I feel like this is a little higher than a curtain jerker spot because of the matchup.
Right. It's unique. Yeah. It's unusual. You know, they very rarely ever did.
Yeah.
Face versus face.
And Atlas is kind of up the card too a bit. So yeah, it feels like a little more of a than your standard just opening, whatever, throw them.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. It's two lower mid card guys, I guess you would say. But yeah, it got good when they started actually, you know, teasing that they were gonna actually, you know, become aggressive with each other instead of pussyfooting around with the scientific wrestling. And I like the finish a lot. Where, Atlas leapfrogged over Poffo and then caught him with a backslide. That was pretty well done. And and then Gorilla also got in a shot at the no longer going to be seen on MSG cards. George Wells yet again for being out of shape. He just can't let that go. That's too bad. But star and a half for me.
All right. Yeah, poor George Wells. but yeah, no, I liked it. I did like it a lot. It was, I thought it was better than your standard opener. And I liked that, again, faces, but they show that aggression and really went at it. So good stuff for the opener. All right, let's head to our next match, which actually kept this card nice and varied. We had that weird face-face opener, and now we get to a battle royal, the first one we've seen since we've been doing these shows here at MSG. Of course, we saw the one back at WrestleMania 2. So neat concept here, stacked and loaded field with a huge cash prize on the line. We get all the entrances for everybody. The crowd is pumped up. And neat, too, that the managers are in on this. They're trying to cash in. So here's the full roster that we have in the match. Junkyard Dog, Greg Valentine, King Tonga, Jimmy Hart, Billy Jack Haynes, we'll talk about him, Harley Race, Lanny Poffo, Mike Sharp, Pedro Morales, Brutus Beefcake, Tony Atlas, Spot Moondog, the British Bulldogs, Special Delivery Jones, Luscious Johnny V, CV Afi, Rex Moondog, Tony Gurria, Bobby Heenan, Big John Studd, and King Kong Bundy. Good buzz as we get underway. After the bell, everyone goes right at Studd and Bundy and eliminate both of them to a huge pop, which I thought was a great way to start things off. And then Jimmy Hart bolts outside the ring and hides on the floor. So really great open, nice strategy, take out the Giants, Jimmy bails, and we kind of set the story for the match. Heenan gets thrown out right away, too, and that pretty much wraps the night for them. Heenan comes over and bitches on commentary, saying that they strike fear in everyone's hearts, and that's why they're targeted in these matches. Al agrees with him. We get the usual battle royal action. From there, trading off with some teases. Jimmy's hiding under the ring and keeps popping out his head to status everything. SD gets thrown out as Gorilla says Jimmy's like Punxsutawney Pete. Way off. Sharp and Atlas get tossed, followed by Johnny V, who's dumped hard to the floor. The crowd is really into this one. A lot of action everywhere. Everyone's aggressive. Lots of brawling. Hammer throws Gorilla and then shoves Pedro out. I'm sorry, Hammer chucks Gorilla, and then Pedro shoves Race out, which Al calls an upset. And Gorilla says Bobby's crew is now officially done for the night. Afi's eliminated. The Bulldogs dropkick both Moondogs to eliminate them. We have 9 left, plus Jimmy under the ring as Al breaks down the field. Beefcake overpowers Dynamite on the ropes and shoves him outside as Al continues to be surprised that Poffo is lingering around. Al mixes up Afi and Tonga a bit and then apologizes for his confusion. Pedro ends up on the top turnbuckle and Hammer keeps clobbering them until he tumbles to the floor and into the announce table. Hammer also throws out Billy Jack and then Tonga as he's really become a force in the ring. We're down to 4 and Jimmy and Al is still shocked about Poffo, still. Hammer picks up Davey and just throws him out to the floor in a great spot that shows off some nice strength. Hammer then grabs Lanny, picks him up and throws him out, and the crowd is all revved up as we're down to Hammer and JYD. Hammer shoves JYD through the middle ropes, and Dog spots Jimmy and pulls him out from under the ring and throws him inside. JYD and Valentine trade blows as Jimmy cheers them on. Hammer then holds JYD so Jimmy can smack him, but Dog is able to leverage Hammer with a head scissor against the ropes, and both men tumble to the floor, giving Jimmy Hart the win. Jimmy celebrates like a maniac as the crowd is just pissed and chanting bullshit. JYD and Hammer come back in to bitch as Jimmy bolts. And I thought this is really, really fun. I thought Hammer looked awesome in this. Just a wrecking ball that cleaned house with authority. A real fun battle royal with a lot of energy and heat. Well booked. It didn't linger, but there was enough meat to it. And I loved the finish of Jimmy Hart. Something really memorable, really cool. I went 2.5 on this one, Kelly.
Yeah, I like this one a lot as well. It's on the higher end of battle royals for sure. With the managers being involved, it was unique, like you said. Just and the fact that Hammer was alone against 5 baby faces, that was really unique and strange. You'd think it would be more like a baby face against 5 heels, So that was an interesting booking there. But I'd seen this one before. I think it's on one of the tapes. It's been out there, and definitely the Jimmy Hart hiding under the ring.
Oh, for sure.
Whole thing is very memorable, and his whole gear. Like, this was one of the very few times Jimmy actually wrestled in the WWF. He wrestled a lot in Memphis, but not very often in New York. So that's another unique thing.
And his outfit is very memorable.
Yeah, definitely. And that was what he would wear in Memphis. It was like his standby wrestling outfit. Poor loser Siviafi. I think he got eliminated through the middle rope. Did you guys see that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I did. I went back
and watched it. Yeah, I know. He didn't even contest it. It's like, yeah, okay,
whatever.
I'm out of here.
No winner anyway.
I don't care. He just didn't give a shit.
And then Al can't even get the names right either with him and Tonga.
I know. Yeah, that was worse.
Yeah. Oh, Affy. It's just the lowlights just pile up one after the next. And yeah. The crowd, of course, hated the finish because, you know, it was the least likely guy, of course, to win. The bullshit chant. Very entertaining battle royal. I also went 2.5 stars.
I went 2 stars. It was a lot of fun. I like the JYD kind of got his own intro before the rest of the crew came. I mean, they all came in, but he got like the, you know, got to the ring. Crowd was crazy. Stud and Bundy. I thought that was interesting that they got eliminated early. I know you said, JR, that was a fun moment, but I'm curious if that was kind of like a sign that maybe they're kind of on the way out the door. Well, I got another theory that makes
hopefully
more sense.
Yeah.
And that is that they actually, this is the entire roster of the building, and half of these guys all had to wrestle later. So I'm still perplexed why this was second and not last. Well, we know why it wasn't last, or at least second to last.
Yeah.
Because half these guys, almost the rest, except for Lanny and Atlas, everybody else had to wrestle again.
Right.
So I think that's why Stud and Bundy probably got eliminated, is because they don't get winded.
I think, too, it actually protects them, because if you're going to have them linger, then someone's probably going to have to throw them out on their own. This kind of gives them cover by having everyone gang up and eliminate them. And, you know, they've done it. They do it in Royal Rumbles in years to come, too, where they have everyone gang up on the big guys, because it helps them save some face. You know, they don't...
Right. That's true.
They don't have to look as bad and get hurt by just having like one guy throw them out. This helps.
No, you're right. That's true.
Yeah. And I think also it makes it more exciting, because a lot of the fans would be thinking before the match, oh, it's going to be either Stud or Bundy that are going to win. Right. Cause they were obviously on another level than most of the guys. Stud won a lot of battle royals. Bundy was one of the biggest heels in the territory. So having them eliminated right away suddenly made it like very unpredictable.
Right.
And I think that was a good way to start the match, because then suddenly, you know, the fans are like, well, I don't know who's going to win now.
I'm
totally shocked.
And then they do it well, too, by, I thought it was really smart how they really built up Hammer throughout the match. So then it looks very obvious that he's going to win, right? Or that JYD is going to kind of survive and toss him. I mean, they built it well where you figure they'll, maybe JYD will throw out Hammer and then just chuck Jimmy too or something. But, I thought it was really shrewd booking.
Yeah, it was.
And plus the fact that JYD and Hammer are wrestling later kind of adds to the drama of that as well. So that's kind of cool as well. Does this prove, like we talked about, JR, you and I kind of debated this a couple of shows ago. Does this prove again that if there is a hierarchy or a food chain right now of heel managers, that Jimmy is at the top of it? In terms of like the, if you had to rank the heel managers in the WWF right now, that Jimmy is number one. Bobby could hit under the ring.
No, I think they picture Jimmy as being more
weaselly. No pun intended.
Yeah, more silly, more slimy and weaselly. Even though Bobby's the weasel, he's just more like a little, just a little worm that would hide under the ring like that, you know? So, yeah, I think that's all it is. I don't think it has anything to do with it. I think they look at them as 1A and 1B anyway. Like, I don't think it's like Jimmy's like some scrub, but I think I think they look at Bobby as more serious at this point. If you look at it 2 years from now, when Bobby's really the weasel and wearing the weasel suit and kind of a stooge, maybe more so. But I think right now they look at Bobby as kind of the more serious guy, whereas Jimmy's kind of more the goof. But I don't think it has anything to do with them swapping roles or anything.
Right. Okay. But, I mean, it's a fun battle royal. You're right about the hammer. He's back kind of – I mean, he's always awesome anyway.
Yeah. Oh, he shined in this one. He looked awesome.
Yeah, he was incredible. It was kind of back to his IC title run of a year earlier. He was just the man. That did it for me. I mean, he might right now. He's kind of an early contender for me for MVP. Obviously, we have a lot to go, but he definitely deserves a piece of the nominee because he was pretty solid tonight. So I give that 2 stars. Fun battle royal. I think it's the first battle royal we've had, right?
Yes, for sure. I mean, not counting
WrestleMania 2. Our first garden battle royal.
Yeah,
our
for
first
sure.
Office yep. battle. Yep, royal, absolutely. I should say. Yeah. So fun. 2 stars. Enjoyed it a lot, and I think it was booked perfectly from beginning to end.
All right. Something that was not booked perfectly from beginning to end is our next match. That is Pedro Morales taking on Iron Mike Sharp. And this is like a match of nightmares are made out of, really. Just like you close your eyes and you picture this and you just think you're in hell. Two early card stalwarts squaring off. We get some feeling out in a lockup to start, but Sharp whiffs on a cheap shot and tumbles over the top. Al talks about Pedro owning a large amount of property in Puerto Rico and calls him a fine fellow. That's a hell of a compliment from Lord Al. You're a fine fellow. We get plenty more dicking around, trading of basic holes as Gorilla and Al is rambling now, talking about Canada's greatest athletes. Sharp gets thrown out again, but comes back in and hammers away with hard blows, knocking Pedro to the floor with a hard bump. Back inside, Sharp chokes and clubbers away, raking his forearm pad across the eyes. Pedro punches his way back into things, and the fight ends up on the floor, where Sharp gets rammed into an announce table and Gorilla. Back inside, Pedro maintains control with strikes, but whiffs on a charge to the corner. Sharp goes in his tights and loads his forearm pad, but Pedro ducks the blow and gets a small package for the win. The master of the small package, Pedro Morales. Sharp attacks after the bell. Pedro makes quick work of him again. Shorter than the usual Sharp match, so thank God. And he also lost clean, so he has to be... This is a guy, Scott, that's probably getting moved down to a lower position, because don't forget, 6 months ago or so, Sharp is going to Broadway's, and he gets like all those false endings, and the match keeps going and going. And here, we don't get that usual fake, and then another heat segment. He just loses clean. So it looks like he's about done, too. Match was pedestrian, but not offensive. It just kind of existed. The finish is fine, too, and thankfully shorter than I expected it to be. So I went 1 star in this, about as pedantic as it gets. Scott, what'd you think?
Yeah, pedantic is a tremendous word. And I gave it a 0.5 star. Your time 5:54, and incidentally the time of the battle royal was 12:53. So yeah, I mean, there's nothing more to do here, and you're right about Iron Mike Sharp. If you've got to lose clean in less than 6 minutes to Pedro Morales, then yeah, I think we pretty know where you're standing is soon. I think about the same level as Corporal Kirshner. Yeah, not much more to say here, just two guys flopping around, and Sharp clearly is not the best of the jobbers at the moment. Shine is dulling. What do you think, Cal?
Yeah, it was short, so it never got into the area where there was boring chance or you wanted it to end. It was quick and over fast. Some nice slugging and big bumps, actually, at the beginning by both guys flying out of the ring. And, yeah, flash small package, like you said, JR. Pedro's the master of the small package and is... In the later stages of his career, he really clung to that one as his go-to finish. Yeah, nothing much, but yeah, I want a star.
All right. I think that's probably the least we'll ever say about a match, just that match right there. Who cares? You know, I mean, there's nothing worth talking about at all.
No, not at all.
All right, let's head to our next match then, and that is a pretty big one. King Tonga and Steve Yaffe taking on King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. Interesting tag here. That's a shrewd use of Afi to pair him with some guys that have good heat that can work a match. Nice to see Studd and Bundy settling in as a team, too. Helps them stay a little bit relevant and above water as they shift out of the main event. The graphic made me laugh. It's like King Bundy, which was pretty funny. Yeah. Al says this will be the coup of the century, or at least 1986, if Tonga and Afi win. He is so much fun to listen to. Gorilla reminds us that Tonga has slammed Studd, but was never paid by Heenan. Tonga immediately hoists Stud up to start, but Stud grabs the top rope and blocks it. Tonga chops away, but Stud blocks another slam and buries a knee. Tonga fires back and keeps bringing the fight to Stud, but Stud slings Tonga outside and shoves him into the post. Stud kicks away and pushes Tonga back in and then heads up to the top rope and hits a sledge blow on the way down. Stud slams Tonga hard, but Tonga comes back with a sidekick and some headbutts before chopping away, finally knocking Stud to his back. Al implores Tonga to cover, but he dances instead and lays in more headbutts and then slams Stud with authority to a big pop. Tonga dances, then covers, so only gets two. Tonga tries another slam, but Stud clobbers him. Afi comes in, and Al wonders why Stud won't make a tag. Stud hammers Afi and demands Tonga come back in. Afi leapfrogs Stud and tries a dropkick, but Stud just walks away during the move, which was funny, and tags Bundy. Bundy shoots Stevie hard to the corner, but he comes back with a crossbody off the middle rope for two. Stevie brings the heat with some right hands and a headbutt, but walks right into a hard knee. Bundy slams him and drops a hard knee on him for two before Tonga makes a save. Stud tags back in again and keeps bringing the heavy blows, and Stevie's busted open, and Al thinks it might be his nose. Stud whacks Tonga and then goes back to working over Stevie with some help from Bundy on the apron. Tonga eventually gets a hot tag, but Stud plants him and tags in Bundy, who kicks away and then levels Tonga with a shoulder block. He follows up with a knee drop for the win, but everyone is just confused because it looked like Tonga kicked out, and that wasn't supposed to be the finish. Everyone just stands around while Bundy bickers with the ref, and Gorilla says the ref panicked and maybe didn't mean to count three, but called the bell anyway. Complete mess. The match itself was solid and was just starting to get cooking with a possible good finish before the screw-up. And this had to be a fuck-up because there's no way that with Siviafi in there that Tonga is getting pinned clean. Yeah. So it definitely was a botch. Tonga's looking better and better, though, I thought, and the slam spot was great. The crowd loved it. I thought this was getting good before the screw-up. I was enjoying it, and then it just went to shit at the end. I went 2 stars, Kel.
Yeah, so did I, 2 stars. It was actually, yeah, 95% a pretty good match. We have the prototype Islanders here, basically, with Tonga and Siviafi. Thankfully, the Tonga kid came back later in the year, and we didn't have to have Afi in that role. But Tonga and Stud work pretty well together. We saw them last month in a match. Remember, at the end, they had the big slugfest. And Tonga's definitely extra motivated now that he's not wrestling Ron Shaw and Les Thornton and all those other scrubs. So he's up for it. The crowd was hot for this match. Big pop for the Tonga Slam, of course, on Stud. And Afi got another big spot where he almost got a pin on King Kong Bundy off a crossbody.
He's looking better, too. I feel like he's kind of pieced it together a bit, but it's like we said, it's just too little too late for him.
It's just way too late. It's tragic. He's better now, but there's nothing he can do. He's condemned to being a loser. But it's funny because, he probably was supposed to be the one to get pinned in this, but the referee just totally fucked this up. Another thing was the bell keeps ringing, and this is an ongoing theme the whole night. Like, it's a feature of MSG cards, because the bell, I guess, is on a chair close to the ring, but tonight it must have been, I don't know, almost on the ring, because almost every big bump in the ring makes the bell ring, and it got pretty annoying, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the finish, obviously, the ref wasn't supposed to count to three, but he did. And then instead of, admitting he made a mistake, he's like, oh, no, I counted three, so it's over. And it totally, the finish deflates the crowd. It makes Tonga kind of look like a loser. It totally killed his momentum that he loses in that manner. Oh, geez. Yeah, I hope that referee was totally canned for that one. That's all he had to do instead of being stubborn about it and insisting that you ring the bell. What an ass. 2 stars for me, but with a totally titanic screw up for a finish.
It may be the worst. I mean, we've seen some bad ref ones, but that might be the worst one.
Yeah, it's up there for sure.
I gave it 2 stars as well. I thought the match was a lot of fun. I thought it was very stiff, and I felt like at times Stud and Bundy were almost kind of like going into business for themselves. I mean, Stud was like just countering punches in the middle of punches, and it was a lot of fun. I think they were really stiffing the shit out of each other. I think Afi was probably a little over his head here compared to not realizing what a tough guy his tag team partner is. I thought the body slam thing is starting to get a little played out and
yeah,
worn
so?
Out.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah, I think.
I think so.
I kind of don't mind it, like, because I feel like it's a real good heel tactic. Like, he's clearly been body slammed multiple times, but they just keep lying and saying he hasn't. So, I don't know. I kind of picture it as just like, whatever, like, oh, I'm unbeaten even though he keeps losing, stuff like that. So, I mean, I haven't minded it, and I think it kind of is cool that Tonga just keeps fucking slamming him and not getting paid. He keeps getting hosed, but he just keeps doing it. I think it's actually making him look kind of badass, but, I mean, either way, I can see. See it getting older.
Oh, I mean, it's not awful, and it didn't hinder the match. As a matter of fact, it did make Tonga look better. I just think it's due to finish. They're done with it, I think.
Yeah.
And that ending is just, I mean, that guy had to have gotten fired. I mean, that was just epically terrible.
Well, I don't think he's with the company, right?
Yeah, he was probably a state athletic commission referee.
Hey, pal, none of your backups. I mean, it was bad. The whole thing. They're just staring at each other, and I mean, it was so bad. Bundy's arguing, but he won the match because he wasn't supposed to. I mean, I don't know. Just everything was wrong with that ending. But, yeah. But the match itself was great. I thought it was really stiff. I liked the movement of all four guys. I mean, again, now I feel like, again, maybe they're slowly giving CVAFI, trying to faux snooka him again. He kind of had the same tights on, the way he stands. Maybe they were trying one last ditch effort, but I think I think it's cooked.
It's too bad because they didn't help him. I mean, we talked about this last week, but if they just let the guy work his way organically into it, he might have been okay. You know, if they started him low on and kind of let him work his way up slowly and then maybe develop him into more of a gimmick, but no, they saddled him with so much junk that he had no chance. They just suffocated him right out of the gate.
Yeah, no, I agree. And your match length is 8:33. So, and Studd and Bundy get the win, even though they probably weren't supposed. I don't know. Maybe they were. Or maybe it was supposed to end in a double D. I mean, what do you think the original ending was? Were they supposed to win anyway?
I think they were going to win, but it would have been later off like an avalanche by Bundy or whatever on Affy probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I could see like Tonga and Studd brawling on the floor or something while Bundy pins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, I don't think in any world was Tonga supposed to be the one that takes that loss there.
No.
Especially after getting a slam again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
All right. So here we go. Big MSG debut here in our next match is Billy Jack Haynes takes on Brutus Beefcake. And Billy Jack, an Oregon native, recently, as 1985, was U.S. Tag Team Champions with Wahoo McDaniel and Mid-Atlantic. Arrived in mid-1986 and lasted until 1988. This is his only pay-per-view appearance coming up, though, over our next couple shows, which we'll talk about a little bit more. And he'd eventually show up in WCW in 1990. But other than that, never really resurfaced until he did some crazy YouTube videos later in the past decade.
Yes.
Kind of crazy. All right, big MSG debut here. Billy Jack Haynes, imported from Pacific Northwest. Brutus Beefcake going it alone tonight, but Johnny V is out there with his against his newcomer. Al puts over Billy Jack and says his critics say he could be a champion, and Gorilla says the Dream Team is still number two in the tag team ranks. Billy Jack jaws with Johnny V, allowing Beefcake to land a knee from behind and follow with punches and kicks and some chokes. Billy Jack lands a shot, but Beefcake fights through it and keeps on offense until he misses a fist drop off the middle rope. Billy Jack gets a sunset flip for two, blocks a suplex, and gets one of his own. Brutus is the first one up and stomps on the gut and then takes Billy Jack over with a nice high-angle back suplex for two. Beefcake starts to work the neck, but he tries for a slam and then collapses back for a Billy Jack near fall. Beefer comes back with some punches and then catches Billy with a hard clothesline to the neck for two. The crowd rallies Billy Jack as we get an awkward double clothesline, and he is the first to pop up and stalks Beefcake, who begs off and then punches and chops away. Billy Jack takes him over the backdrop and slams Beefcake and drops a leg. Billy Jack follows with a soft splash off the middle rope for two, but Johnny V reaches up as Billy hits the ropes and the ref calls to the DQ. Beefcake works over Billy, but eventually gets knocked outside as Billy Jack stands tall. Another horseshit finish to what, again, was building to a pretty good match. Beefcake looked pretty good on offense here, and I liked Billy Jack selling and comebacks. There was some good stuff mixed in. The finish was terrible, which knocks it back a bit. It was maybe edging toward 2 stars for me until that finish, which I went 1.5 stars, Scott.
Yeah, I gave it 1 star. Your time, 6:26. And, I thought I had to give Beefcake a little credit here. I mean, this first time he's kind of really shined in a singles match since WrestleMania and against a newcomer, but a guy with some, obviously, some big-time experience. And
I thought it worked fine till the end. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, maybe they were starting to lean on this evening towards finally kind of splitting the Dream Team up. Obviously, they'd stay together longer, but obviously realizing that there are other tag teams out there that are going to be challenging the Bulldogs, maybe the Dream Team's time has come to an end, and maybe they're working on getting them back in some singles. Obviously, for Valentine, that's easy. But Beefer was the guy that they really wanted to, you know, make sure was ready. And I feel like, you know, Haynes worked good with him tonight. For a solid match, perfect length, just under 6.5 minutes, nothing too oppressive. And, you know, the shit finish, I don't know what's with the finishes tonight, just everything's trash. Really working the manager angle of everything tonight for all these guys. Which obviously tells you that Beefcake wasn't meant to get pinned. So I think that's good enough for Beefcake anyway, knowing he wasn't going to get pinned. And, you know, Haynes was fine. He's a decent power guy. I kind of dug him when I was watching, as I was watching the 85 into 86 NWA shows. Good power guy, impressive. Not a huge, you know, stick man. And you'll kind of know, we'll notice that as time progresses. But thought it was a fine, simple power match. I gave it a star. And I think it served its purpose. You know, Beefcake looked solid without getting pinned, and a good, you know, mm-hmm. a good debut for Haynes, even with a crap finish. So I gave it a star. Kel?
Yeah, I want a star too. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I'll give it that. It was short too. And yeah, they kind of just threw bombs at each other, which was kind of surprising. I was expecting headlocks and chin locks and all that stuff. But I'm just not a fan of Billy Jack Haynes. I mean, he's got a good look. He's very ripped and all that, but he's pretty wooden and just, you know, lacks charisma. That's just nothing really. And I was a kid watching wrestling at this time, and I just didn't, you know, get behind Haynes at all. I don't know. He's just, he seems just very dull to me. And yeah, the finish was trash. I mean, it's Haynes' MSG debut, and he can't even get a victory over somebody. I mean, Beefcake at that time was still, and would be, of course, going forward, still be a pushed wrestler. So it's kind of surprising they didn't put Haynes against a lower guy just to get a win instead of this. This doesn't really get him over, I don't think. The crowd was decently hot, but yeah, Haynes, I think we'll see this going forward, that he just doesn't really connect with the crowd, even though they push him. He doesn't get over. Yeah. The star, that's about all.
All right. Yeah,
not much more to say here. Solid enough, but...
Yeah.
I like wooden. That's actually a good adjective for Billy Jack Haynes.
Yeah, he's you know. Wood. Wood like the trees, the big tall trees in the Pacific Northwest.
He's wooden. He seems to wrestle this like in a vacuum. You know what I mean? Like he's trying to, like, I don't know, he just... Yeah, whatever. Like you said, he doesn't connect with the crowd. He's just out there doing stuff at like a different cadence of what everything else is going on.
Yeah, he just never fit in with the general vibe of the WWF. He just didn't feel like that's where he should be.
In other words, Alfred did not think he was supple.
Not at all.
There was no suppleness to Billy Jack. He's got wooden suppleness.
All right. So, next up, we have a tag title match as the British Bulldogs are tag team champions, defending against the Moondogs. Tag titles on the line. Champs are continuing to roll since Mania. Finally past the Dream Team. We can put that in a rear view mirror, it seems like. Neat challenge here for the veteran Moondogs on paper. And this could be sneaky good. Albano leads out the Bulldogs to a big pop. Gorilla puts over the Bulldogs' fanatical workout regiments as we get underway. Davey and Spot open things up by trading big right hands as Gorilla says Spot's dropped 20 pounds and looks good. Dynamite tags in and runs through Spot with a shoulder block as Gorilla says he only goes 100 miles an hour all the time. Rex tags in, and Davey, as does Davey, and the Bulldogs land a double shoulder block. Rex works the arm, but Davey works free, and now he grabs the arm. Rex pushes Davey to the corner, lays in some blows, but Davey reverses a whip and shoots Rex to the corner hard. Dynamite comes in and gets a side headlock, but Rex makes the tag to Spot, and Spot clobbers Davey. Davey comes back with a shoulder block and a slam for two, but Spot escapes and tags Rex, who gets an offense. Rex buries a shoulder to the gut and tags in spot, but Davey comes back to work the arm. Dynamite tags in again and takes hold of the limb and then gets a sunset flip for two. Rex comes in but misses a charge in the corner, and Davey locks in a standing leg grapevine that turns to some weird bridging leg hold that looks like an attempted Boston Crab but never really gets there. Spot punches out, but Davey takes him back down and goes right to the leg again. Spot works out, dodges a charge, and makes a tag. Dynamite comes in two, and he and Rex trade blows. Spot tags in and lays in some blows before tagging right back out. Rex punches away, but Dynamite slips free and tags out. Davey runs through both Moondogs and power slams Rex for two, but Rex leverages Davey hard to the floor. Spot clocks Davey from the apron, and then Rex kicks away at the ribs and drops a knee for one. Spot comes in and lands a back elbow, and we get some double teaming. Rex stays in and gets two, and then goes to a chin lock before tagging Spot, who lands a hard fist off the middle rope for two, and then goes to a chin lock. The crowd rallies Davey as he breaks free, but Rex tags in and maintains control, landing a big splash for two. Rex follows the neck breaker for two and tags in Spot, who lays in some shots before both collide with a hard shoulder block. Spot tags in Rex, who hooks a front face lock. Davey slips free and makes a tag, but the ref wasn't looking. Spot tags in and gets two, and then quickly tags out as the challengers are now in full control. Rex comes off the middle rope with a splash, but eats some knees, and Davey can't quite make the tag out of exhaustion. Spot does get tagged in and comes in with a kick, but Davey gets a crossbody block for one. Rex comes in and cuts Davey down, but Davey gets a snap suplex and finally makes the tag. Dynamite runs right through the Moondogs and heads up top and pelts Spot with a flying knee. Rex breaks up the pin and throws Dynamite over the top. Davey comes in and works over Rex, whipping him into Spot, and then Dynamite comes back, climbs to the top, leaps over Davey and Rex and the ref with a high cross body on Spot for the win. A great finish. I thought it looked awesome. Rock solid match, good heel teamwork all throughout. Davey's selling was on point, as always. Probably just a bit too long. I don't think we needed all that opening shine for the Bulldogs, but the heat and finish were really good, and a nice showing by the Moondogs and a good defense of the champs. I went 2.5 on this tag match, Kel. What'd you think?
Yeah, I went 2.5 as well. We're pretty aligned this week. It was a pretty good match in the end. It took a while to get there. Going back to the beginning, the music was for the Bulldogs was clearly dubbed in because you could tell Finkel's announcing was you know, Finkel of 10 years ago or whenever the...
Oh, it was definitely done like yesterday.
Yeah.
There's any doubt about that, yeah.
So what were they dubbing out exactly? What music did the Bulldogs have that couldn't be played? That's what I was trying to.
Maybe it was Howard's mic. Maybe his mic wasn't. Because remember, didn't Gorilla say at the beginning of this match Alfred's having problems with his microphone?
Hmm.
Didn't he say that at the beginning of this match? Maybe it was the next match. So maybe it just sounded bad.
Oh, maybe. Because I was thinking, what light like song that they would have had to license did the Bulldogs have at that time? Anarchy in the UK.
I know. Maybe it had nothing to do with the theme. Because I thought it was the beginning of this match or maybe the match after Gorilla says to Alfred that, oh, Fink's mic doesn't seem to be working. I thought he said that.
Yeah.
So maybe it was Fink's mic was cutting in and out or something. That's possible.
Yeah, maybe. Well, they clearly cleaned it up and fixed it.
Oh, they definitely did. Yeah, they definitely did.
Yeah, it sticks out like a sore thumb. But, I'm going to put on my kayfabe hat as... Peter Winson, the host of the wonderful pod Greetings from Allentown, which is on Place to Be Nation. It's one of his favorite phrases because the Moondogs lost, remember, last month to the U.S. Express, and now they're getting a title shot. Yeah, in kayfabe, I just don't like that. I mean, I'm not expecting the U.S. Express to get a title shot, but what did the Moondogs do to deserve a title shot in kayfabe?
Yeah, but it's so weird. This should have been non-title, and then if they win, maybe they'd earn one. Like, just do that. Just say it's not for the titles, but they can earn a title match or the win or something like that. Yeah, they really haven't done shit to earn this match at all.
Yeah, and I think that hurt the early stages of the match. The crowd wasn't really into it. Like, for a Bulldogs match, there wasn't a lot of heat. And I was wondering, because I didn't know how long this match was going to last, so at the beginning I was thinking, oh, wow, this is shaping up to be like one of the Bulldogs' lesser matches. There was no heat. They weren't really doing too much. But then, and we had long heat on Davey Boy, and the crowd started getting into it, and I suddenly realized, holy crap, they're actually going to go like 20 minutes with the friggin' Moondogs.
Well, if you look at this card, they clearly had to eat up time somewhere, because as the show is going on, I keep looking at it, and I'm like, we're kind of chugging along. It's like, you know, it's like, where are we going to get the time from? Because you knew the main event just wasn't going to be that long, given who was in it. Yeah. Like, you know, those guys haven't gone long. And if you look at the rest of the card, where's it coming from? Where's the time coming from? So, yeah, I think this just had the, you know, I mean, the Moondogs are pretty good workers. So I think it just happened to have the, you know, the match with the four best workers that could go a long time. So they had a fill time somewhere. This definitely felt like one of the shorter MSG cards. But that match, I liked this Bulldogs match, but it definitely felt long.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. They probably had to, like, you know, right before they went out or whatever, it's like, okay, you guys got to go a bit longer than usual because usually you wouldn't see a Bulldogs match against anybody this long. But yeah, it turned into a decent match because they did have the time to build it and tell a story. And Dynamite's crossbody was awesome over three people. I mean, we're not going to see a lot of prime Dynamite left, so we got to soak it in and really appreciate it because his time is running out. His body is slowly breaking down. But yeah, this was cool. I had never seen this match, I don't think, before. So, and I'm a big fan of the Bulldogs, so I like to see most of their work. And yeah, 2.5 stars.
Yeah, I gave it 2.5 stars as well. I agree. I think the title match, I think the Bulldogs, and forget the fact that they lost last month. They barely have even wrestled as a team on TV. When was the last time we saw Rex before today? I mean, really. And Spotty's been jobbing as a singles guy, so I'm going even further kayfabe for you, Kel. Forget the fact that they even bothered. Forget that it was even a match last month. They didn't even wrestling as a team.
Yeah,
I seriously don't remember the last time we saw Rex. I mean, it's weird. But the match overall was great. Bulldogs are the Bulldogs, and you're right. There's only so many bullets left in Dynamite Kid's gun. We might as well enjoy them now while we can.
Yeah.
Your official time, the longest match of the night, 18:23. Which is probably about, I would say, 5 minutes too long. I agree with you, JR. I think all that schlock at the top didn't need to happen. But it was a good match otherwise. His Bulldogs are right now in the you know, zenith of their run, looking good in the ring. Crowd loves them. Albano stooging. You know, the Bulldogs are just the Bulldogs. But yeah, top to bottom, I enjoyed the match. It was probably a little too long. But served its purpose, got the Bulldogs over as great tag team champions, and they move along. Curious to see who the next heel team, because, again, we talked about this, I think, on the last show. The tag division right now is not as good as we all kind of remember it being. And trying to find some heel challengers right now is a little difficult, but I think that's what they're trying to do right now. I wouldn't really consider the Moondogs credible heel challengers, but... there's got to be some out there, and as we mentioned, the Dream Team that's run its course. So
true.
That's a key thing right now.
They are lacking.
That's a key thing right now for the Bulldogs is finding whoever the next key, you know, big heel challenger is for them.
You would think Stud and Bundy, and we've talked about it too. That
I know, right?
The Funks were probably getting lined up for that spot before Terry Bolger, right? And we had talked about that.
I know. Yeah, I know they worked Stud and Bundy on house shows for sure, but I don't think any of those matches ever made tape, as far as I know. And I'm not going to spoil things for the next month's card, but there's another kind of suspect contender coming up on the next MSG show as well.
Oh boy.
Do we think should Captain Lou have turned heel at all and maybe brought a team, like turned on the Bulldogs and tried to win for, or do you think he's just about on fumes anyway, even
I
in
think
this
he's
role?
On fumes.
Okay.
He's on fumes. He had one foot out the door, was going to Hollywood to try and make it there. But yeah, if he'd have stuck around, I think a heel turn would have worked.
Well, I guess they wanted to keep him face
early
the
87
stuff.
Or something. Yeah. Once he get past all that.
Well, he was just a heel and he was so terrible. I don't think we ever want to see him do anything ever again. We're just going to wait for him to leave. But we have three heel managers, you know, four. We should have some tag teams floating around somewhere. I think Stud and Bundy clearly should have been the next team in line.
We've talked about this. I think we talked about it last week, but there is such a drop off dramatically here in the depth of the roster in post WrestleMania 2. I mean, you know, like we said, Andre's gone, Piper's gone, Hogan is pretty much gone. You know, so it's like who you know, all of a sudden this like dearth of talent in the mid card is just, you know, flushed out, and now we're kind of looking like where the fuck is Bob Orton on all these shows? Like, where's he? Yeah. Morocco,
I know,
like,
right?
Like all these guys, like these are guys that have been filling up these mid cards in 85, all seem to be missing. That could be, you know, propping up some of these shows. Like those are guys that, you know, we could be having in MSG. But I mean, Adonis is here. You think Orton would be too? All right. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, of course, it'll be time for our pop culture corner. We will finish the show, give out our awards, and wrap things up. So let's take a listen to what else we've got going on at PlayStation.com. Got a thing for you. Because. And I can't let go. My friends wonder what is wrong with me. Well, I'm in a daze. From your love, you see, I came back to let you know. Got a thing for you, and I can't let go. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
PlayStation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And if you're listening to the Place to Be podcast, please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at the July 1986 Madison Square Garden house show. Myself, Scott Kelly in the house. And you know, Scott, as we've moved through this podcast, I cannot believe we've already been at this thing for how long? Six and a half years. Mm-hmm. Where's the time gone? We've moved houses, we've picked up roommates, we've had children, we've ascended up the power ranks of the Mets of Columbus. Lots of stuff has happened over the past six and a half years. If only we could hold those years back, Scott, and stop aging, especially you. But what can you do? So why don't we go ahead and take a moment, and we will head to this week's Pop Culture Corner with Mr. Scotland Friscolo. Scott, take it away.
I'm surprised you're not a Doctor Who fan, wanting to get into the TARDIS and stop time so that you stay your age forever.
I can't believe it's a female Doctor Who! Ma!
Oh, God. I called it, too.
I know nothing about Doctor Who besides editing a couple of Parv pieces, and now there's a female, and everyone's flipping out for no reason.
It's ludicrous. It's long overdue, and I think it's going to help the show. Anyway, as you can tell, number one for this week, and this show was on a Saturday, so the Top 100 came out today, July 12th, 1986, and number one is Simply Red with Holding Back the Years. As Kelly said, pretty good, kind of sing-songy, you know, good radio hit, and there you go. Now, we had said over the last couple of months that the Top 10 has really had its share of utter stinkers, but this one, as we Genesis. There'll be sad songs by our yacht rocker from the islands, Mr. Billy O'Shan. Number four, our girl Janet, which one of my favorite Janet songs, Miss Jackson, if you nasty. Love that song, Nasty by Janet. Number five, Who's Johnny by El DeBarge. Do you remember this movie that this song's from, Mr. Nelson?
I've probably seen it, but no, I don't remember it.
Who's Johnny? He said. Short Circuit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
So, number six.
I haven't seen Short Circuit in forever. I feel like we watched that one time in school. It was like one of those like half day or like summer day movie days or whatever in like fifth grade. I remember watching it. I probably haven't seen it since then.
I haven't seen it since the 80s. I know that for sure.
Yeah, me neither. At number six, from his from one of his best albums ever, So, that is Peter Gabriel with Sledgehammer, which means JR. You know what song we hopefully will be getting in the top 10 somewhere down the line. Not Salisbury Hill. Our favorite future WrestleMania theme.
That's right.
Number seven, speaking of yacht rockers, the Kenneth Loggins with Danger Zone, which of course is from Top Gun.
80s Loggins is not nearly as good as 70s Loggins.
Number eight, Howard Jones, No One's to Blame, which is...
What's that new song they've been playing on Yacht Rock with... I think it's Loggins and Messina, where they're, like, in a boat, basically. You can hear the boat creaking. Like, the last 3 minutes of the song is just the boat whispering back and forth in the water and creaking.
I'm trying to think. Is that... It's not Danny's song.
No.
Is that the Even Though We Ain't
Yeah,
Got
No,
it's
that's
not
been
that
on
one.
Forever. No, no, no.
Yeah.
This is a new one that just started. I only heard it once or twice, but like the last 2.5 minutes is literally just like this like slow beat with the boat creaking in the background.
Is it like the money song? The something song, I think it is.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking
like
about.
That. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird song.
I don't know. My favorite Loggins Messina combo song is Vahiva La. Because it took me a while to understand how that. Vahiva La! I thought they were just making noises, but it's actually a word.
Well, isn't that really what Vahiva La will not die when you're in the hospital? Is that what you say?
Vahiva! No. All right, at number nine, the Moody Blues with Your Wildest Dreams, which, Kelly, is a terrible radio song. You know that song. Your wildest dreams.
That's horrible.
Nobody likes the Moody Blues. They're awful. And at number 10, a great song, actually, Tough Enough by the Fabulous Thunderbirds. Boom, boom, boom. That's a great song, actually. That's somebody's theme, right, Kelly?
Maven.
Wasn't that somebody's theme?
Did Maven use the Tough Enough theme?
No,
I don't know.
This was better than that. So if this song was the Tough Enough theme, the show would have been 10 times better. Anyway, so there's your
top
10 and at number but you know, actually stretching it out, the next two songs are actually very good as well. Number 11, little Peter Cetera with The Glory of Love from Karate Kid Part 2
and from the Christmas special from this year.
That's right. And then number 12, Like a Rock by Bob Seger, which is actually a tremendous album. All right. So there's your top 10.
for today.
I hate that song because I hated all those stupid Ford commercials. They're so boring.
Like I know.
A rock.
I know. Kind of killed it for me. It's a great song, too. Anyway, there's your top 10. All right. We have one movie.
There you go. Number 9 song of the country this year. Maven's theme. Tough enough.
Oh, God.
It's rare 1986 new metal.
There you go. I'm telling you, it sounds like somebody's NWA theme.
Yeah, it sounds like every NWA theme. They all sound the fucking same. Oh, that NWA theme. Oh, okay.
That NWA
theme. That specific one.
I know. That tag team. Okay.
God, that song is so fucking 2002 right there.
It really is. Kind of like POD or fucking Drowning Pool or... Anyway. All right. We have one... you know what's so 2001? If we play the Chronic theme. Chronic. Anyway. You want to see Maven now? He's on QVC.
Hey, good
for
him.
I think Dr. G bought a Giants jacket from him. Anyway.
I want to see him and Don West do like a tag team power hour.
Yes. Jackets and cards. All right. The night before, July 11th, of course, a Friday movie night. One movie. Only one movie. But... this is actually a pretty well-known movie. It made $12.3 million, probably one of Robin Williams' funnier 80s movies. It is. Kel, what do you think?
Oh, 1986.
Patch Adams.
What? No, it's not Patch. Did you say Patch Adams?
Yeah.
Not even close.
God, I don't know.
Club Paradise.
Oh, God. Yep. I haven't thought of that movie since 1986.
Oh, Mavens and Club Paradise?
Club Paradise.
Okay, you want to look it up? Is that what we're doing here? Hang on.
Usually,
it was by Harold Ramis, was the director. Jack Moniker is a Chicago firefighter, becomes injured on the job. Using his disability money, he decides to retire and live the good life in a small Caribbean island called St. Nicholas. He buys a small amount of property there and lives among other washed-up personalities, says Anthony Croydon Hayes, Lord Alfred Hayes' brother. Appointed by British Crown as governor of St. Nicholas, Hayes is more concerned with vacationing than governing, and Miss Philippa Lloyd, who's visiting St. Nicholas with some sailor friends of hers, decides to permanently stay and become Jack's girlfriend. He refers to her as Miss Philadelphia. Starring Robin Williams, Peter O'Toole, Rick Moranis, Jimmy Cliff, Twiggy, Adolph Caesar, Eugene Levy, Brian Doyle Murray, Joanna Cassidy. Who else we got? Robin Duke. That's about it for the big names. Harold Ramis' wife Anne was a cameo as well.
And so it's not Adolf Hitler and it's not Julius Caesar.
Correct.
It's Adolph Caesar.
Adolph Caesar, American actor, age 52. He passed away in 1986, March 6th. So looks like he was in this posthumously. His last completed film, released posthumously, Caesar was working on the Los Angeles set of the 1986 film Tough Guys when he suffered a heart attack and died a short time later.
All right, JR, you would have heard this song when you were in your, whatever it was, fifth grade classroom. This was it right here. It's about as good as the movie.
That's about what I expect from a... robotic themed 1986 movie.
Okay, so we expect that from every 2002 pay per view. All right, and so that's the one movie that came out the day before. All right, let's go back to let's go to sports quickly. A little baseball on this Saturday, of course, all teams in action. The New York baseball Yankees shut out the Twins at the Homer Dome 8-0 behind Scott Nielsen.
They're playing tonight in the
I was going to say that.
Minnesota. Yankees and
how
Twins.
How about that for fitting, huh? Not playing at the Homer Dome, though.
No.
Scott Nielsen with the win. The Mets blew out the Braves 10-1 at
Tommy
Shea.
Nielsen.
And the Blue Jays lose 5-3 at Exhibition Stadium to the Oakland A's and future Hall of Famer Dave Stewart. Is he in the Hall of Fame? I don't think he is, right?
No.
Almost Hall of Fame, I guess.
Future Blue Jay and helped them win the World Series in 1993.
Yeah, yes, he did. Oh, my God. Remember this guy? Steve Ontiveros got the save for the A's. Good grief. Jimmy Key took the loss. He was 8-6. All right.
Love Jimmy Key.
Yes. Well, here are the standings to this point in the American League East. The Yankees trailing the Red Sox by 7 games in the AL East. The Blue Jays are in 5th. Okay.
The Yankees cannot win this season because we all know the happy ending that's coming in October for us.
Mm-hmm. Not just you. In the AL West, the Angels lead the Rangers by a game and a half.
Since 1986.
Angels lead the Rangers by a game and a half. I'm going to milk this, so I don't really care what you say.
That's what she said.
In the NL East, the Mets at 58-25, best record in the league, leading the Expos by 12.5. And in the West, the Astros and Giants in a virtual tie. Well, actually, they're in a tie at 47-40. So things settling in Major League Baseball. And that's it. More time to listen to that.
All right.
That's it for Culture Corner. Let's get back to the garden.
Let's do it, where Tony Gurria, Brian Bayless's favorite, takes on handsome Harley Race. Harley
really
back again.
Talk about this match.
Harley should have came down to it. Harley is back again for their MSG tilt against old reliable job boy Tony Gurria. Bobby Heenan is with Race and demands the fans be quiet for the Handsome One's intro. Harley has some interesting striped tights on this month. Kind of looks like a big top or something. Harley jumps Gurria at the bell, runs him to the announce table, and then drops a falling headbutt on the floor. Harley stomps away and drops a knee while breaking the count along the way. Tony makes it back in and tries to run Harley to the corner, but Harley ducks and hits Tony. And Tony runs into the corner. Harley gets a cradle suplex as the referee is all confused. He has no fucking clue what's going on. He's like walking around looking for a place to count. He finally finds one and counts 3. And as usual, Tony kicks out at 3 because he's an asshole and then just walks off. Just a squash here. Harley's offense is fun, though. Very varied. He moves at a great pace. Doesn't waste any time. Lays in stiff shots. I went 0.5 star for Harley. And Gurria's Gurria. Just nothing doing. What'd you think, Scott?
I never thought I'd do this for a Harley Race match, but I gave this a dud.
Yeah?
This match is awful, and Tony Gurria should be ashamed of himself.
Oh, he
sucks. At how unprofessional. Fortunately, the match is only 205, but he should be ashamed of himself as how unprofessional he was in this match. I don't know what the hell he was trying to prove, but he sandbagged Harley this entire match, and it was just totally unprofessional. And as much as I don't want to give a Harley Race match a dud, he just couldn't do anything. Tony Gurria just totally wrecked him. Maybe Harley Race was precluding him from finding great young boys to find, as he said on that infamous TNT. But it was just unprofessional and wrong the way he worked this match. And I'm disappointed. Complete dud. Thank God it was only 2 minutes. I'm surprised. I wonder what Harley did backstage after. Probably gave him a real 2 minute match. They probably never forgot. But it was just disappointing, very upsetting that Tony Gurria acted this way to a professional like Harley Race. So, big dud. Kelly's not a dud. What did you think?
Well, I mean, Gurria had been, you know, with the territory since 1972, and this is rock bottom right here. I mean, he's squashed. I've seen a lot of Tony Gurria matches, and he loses a lot of them in this era, of course. But to get completely squashed, I was shocked at the end. Like, because I've come to, you know, appreciate Gurria, and you know he's part of the Titans years and all that. So I took it personally. I think when he got squashed in this match, and he probably was upset. I mean, he's someone who had been there for 15 years. Here comes Harley Race, and someone says, "Okay, Tony, tonight you're just getting destroyed by this guy who just showed up in the territory." And I can kind of sympathize with him. But in the early stage of this match, I was mostly concerned with the fact that Harley Race and Tony Gurria are like the good and evil versions of one personality. It was because of the tattoos, I think. They both have the old time like sailor tattoos, right?
Yes.
and so I thought Race is the evil version of Tony Gurria, basically. I mean, Race has a pretty decent head of hair himself. And they're about the same age, give or take a few years. And so that was where my mind was. And then out of nowhere, you know, Gurria is hit with a pretty monstrous cradle suplex. That was actually really awesome. Yeah. And then I don't think this was the same referee as the match where Tonga got pinned by accident, but Jesus, could he have made Gurria look worse? Because Gurria has to sell like a six count.
I mean, maybe that's why he kicks up like right away, because he's like, fuck this, I've already been laying here forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a close-up of Gurria's face afterwards, and I think he's pissed mostly at the referee for hanging him out to dry there. Because not only is he squashed, he has to sell basically a six or seven count instead of just a three count to add insult to injury. This was interesting. I love these kind of matches that have this weird, you know, sort of backstory or whatever you want to call it to it, where you can kind of pick it apart and look at, you know, this is the sad decline of Tony Gurria, and it's just gets sadder by the month. I went a half star on this one. Wasn't much.
Yeah, I gave it the bump just for the half star, just for Harley's offense, because I really have been enjoying his offense. It's so varied stiff. So anyway, poor Tony. Not really. All right, next up we have pretty much a rematch from earlier tonight in the Battle Royal, and also a rematch from WrestleMania 1 as the Junkyard Dog takes on Greg Valentine. Johnny V's out with the hammer. JYD gets a big pop as always. Al says he asked JYD on TNT why he never has challenged Hulk Hogan for the title, and the dog says you sit back and wait, and you do it when the time is right. We get a bunch of posturing as Hammer and V bitch about the dog's chain. Hammer eventually gets in the ring, and we get underway as dog levies some hard hands and headbutts. The two trade hard blows, the dog winning the battle and knocking Hammer down for a two count. Hammer begs off for a moment, catches Junkyard Dog with a hammer blow to the neck, and then follows with two more blows for a near fall. Hammer grabs a chin lock, but dog works free and comes back with strikes for a near fall, and then a small package for two. Gorilla chastises Junkyard Dog for a lax pin on the first attempt, and JYD backflips Hammer, but Hammer turns into a sunset flip for two. JYD keeps in control with punches and rams Hammer to the top buckle. Hammer comes back with a chop, and they end up clotheslining each other. Dog tries for a slam, but Hammer collapses on him for two. Hammer comes back with some elbows and gets a busted small package for two, and these guys are really just beating the piss out of each other at this point. Dog comes back with a reverse neck breaker for two, but the two guys start trading blows again. Hammer busts JYD down with a hard elbow and then starts to work the legs and goes to the figure four. Dog hangs in for a while, and Hammer eventually releases the hold, which shocks Gorilla. Hammer keeps pounding away with fists and elbows, but misses a falling headbutt. JYD drops Hammer with a big power slam, but is too weak to cover. Hammer goes for the figure four again, but JYD kicks him to the floor. Dog clubs Hammer as he tries to get back in the ring, but Hammer yanks him outside, and the two trade blows from there, and then fight into the aisle for a double count out. This is really fun. I mean, way light years better than WrestleMania 1. A real physical war with tons of heavy blows and stiff offense. The dog was in the figure four a bit too long, I thought, but other than that, I thought this was structured really well. And the double counter actually worked, because the tone had been set from the Battle Royal to here that these guys just wanted to beat the piss out of each other, and I was fine that they just couldn't settle anything. Good outing for both guys, and it felt like a real struggle in a good way that they were just going back and forth. I went 3 stars on this. Shocked me that I went three stars on this. And I wish this was their WrestleMania 1 match, because I really, really enjoyed it. What'd you think, Kelly?
I mean, it started off slow. I thought JYD... You know, I made the note of, I think he's getting into that junk food dog territory where he's moving pretty slow. He's kind of sloppy. Like, there were spots, like a clothesline spot looked pretty amateurish. But I'll give him credit. I mean, Valentine slapped on the figure four, and it went on for a while. But then JYD actually sold the leg for the rest of the match, and that was cool. And... yeah, it turned into a decent match at the end with a slugfest on the outside, double count out. Almost, you'd think, like the beginning of a feud between these two guys. But right. I don't think it goes any further than this. I went 2 stars. I mean, like I said, the beginning, I was expecting it to be quite bad the way it started, but it ended up quite good. So, yeah, 2 stars.
I actually gave this 3.5. Oof. I thought it was absolutely awesome. My.
It was a blizzard at Scotty's house.
Oh, it was awesome. Awesome. It was awesome. I don't know if I could say how many times I could say awesome. I just love when he's at his best. I just love watching Greg Valentine wrestle. I mean, he's just blunt force trauma, and no, he's better than that guy. I mean, he.
That would have been just the name of a wrestler who had that.
He's bland force trauma, Maven.
He's bland force trauma. I mean, he made, and he is getting. You could tell he's getting a little plump, Kelly. I think you're exactly right. But he made JYD look like $1 million. When Hammer is motivated, man, what an animal! He was incredible. And the match had a good pace. It was 13:32. I didn't mind the extended figure four. I had no problem with that. It was just a great stiff fight, and I think this was the only benefit of having the battle royal earlier in the show is that it kind of motivated this, mm-hmm. and this was friggin' great. So, yeah, I was pumped. And it was – I can't believe how Head and Shoulders better it was than WrestleMania 1. Obviously, that show was a little more structured than this one was. But it's sad that we didn't get this match last March. 3.5 stars. I'd watch it again. That's how much I loved it. When Hammer's on a roll, he could make anybody look good. And he made JYD look a lot better than probably at this point he had any business being. Which might be why I'm grading it so high, because it wasn't like he was wrestling somebody that could already make him look good or didn't need the help to look good. He really needed to hold JYD's hand during this match. And
well, I like hard hitting, like realistic matches too. And this felt like a real fucking brawl the way they were hitting each other and fighting around. Nothing. I mean, talk about this complete antithesis of WrestleMania 1. That was just nothing. Like this, you would never imagine this is the same two guys a year later. You know, like even more aged, but. We are there. All right, time for our main event, but first we kill some time because the steel cage is being built. So Gorilla and Al are backstage. We talk up the big match still to come. They talk to Randy Savage, who's happy his title isn't on the line tonight. Savage says he's the best wrestler in the world today and says Alfred has jealous eyes. Gorilla asks Savage why he has a tag partner, but Savage said he didn't ask for this. It was all started by the Sour Santana and the has-been Bruno. Gorilla and Al then talk to Bruno, who says he proved he could do in the ring what he could do in the ring last month. Says he has never lost a cage match in his life, and he's ready for this one. Gorilla and Al then with Tito, who puts over the danger of the bout, and says they've been training, and there'll be nowhere to go or run for their opponents. And then we wrap things up as they talk to Jimmy Hart, who says Adrian Adonis is prepping for his match of his life. He puts over the dangers of the cage and say Bruno and Tito have made a big mistake. And this, of course, is our big blow-off to the feud that's been going on for a few months now. Tito Santana and Bruno Sammartino taking on Randy Savage and Adrian Adonis. And this would be Bruno Sammartino's final Madison Square Garden appearance for 28 years. So quite a while for Bruno.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Crazy, man.
And it's been a fun run. We'll talk about it in a moment. All right, so mm-hmm. Cage gets assembled. We're set for this huge rematch from last month to cap a feud that started back in May. Crowd is buzzing as Fink sets up the match, listing the participants inside the cage, and then he leaves, and we get the entrances. Great heat on Savage and Adonis, balanced out by a huge pop for Bruno and Tito. Adonis and Savage attack at the bell and put the boots in fists. Al says the heels consider Bruno the weak link of the pair. Tito and Bruno turn the tide and hammer away as the crowd's all fired up, and Al calls Savage's robe a dressing gown, which made me laugh. He finally takes it off as he finds a window to do so. Bruno batters Macho in the corner as Adonis controls Tito across the ring. Gorilla reminds us of the rules as Savage tries to escape but gets blocked by Bruno. Tito slings Adonis hard into the cage and blocks Adrian from diving to the door. We get some battling by the door as Bruno and Tito do what they can to keep their opponents inside. Savage works over Tito with the knee drops as Bruno slugs away at Adrian. Savage quickly scales the cage, but Bruno sprints over and makes the save as Tito grabs Adonis before he gets to the door. Bruno chokes Savage as Tito now tries to escape, but Adonis yanks him back in. The teams continue to trade offense as Savage and Adonis do whatever they can to escape. Bruno shoots Savage hard to the corner and gets tied up. Bruno kicks away to a huge pop. Adonis takes Savage over with a suplex, but Bruno prevents him from escaping. Savage gets near the door, but Tito crawls over and makes the save. Adonis gets crotched on the top rope as Savage clocks Tito with an elbow off the middle rope. Bruno works over Savage, but Adonis makes the save. Savage runs Tito into the fence, slicing him wide open. Bruno drops a savage escape, stops a savage escape as Adonis works the cut on Tito, raking him across the fence viciously. Bruno comes over and slings Adonis hard into the post as Tito goes toe-to-toe with Savage. Savage tries to come off the top, but Tito catches him with a punch. Bruno drags Adonis back in as Tito shoots Savage to the cage and then the post. Savage is now ripped wide open as Tito tries to escape but can't make it. Adonis knocks down Bruno and climbs to the top of the cage, but instead of leaving, he dives back in and comes up empty. All four men brawl in the corner, but Savage makes it to the top. Tito follows him up and blocks him and then knocks him to the mat. Savage falls onto Adonis, and then Bruno throws him into the cage and sprints to the door as Tito climbs down, giving them a big win to massive pop. I love Bruno, too, looking back and yelling at Tito to go, and then he just takes off of the door. Really smart psychology. This is an awesome bloody brawl filled with nonstop action. The heat is just tremendous. It all paid off all of the build between these four, as well as Tito and Savage, which has been brewing since February. Great main event, a hidden gem in the summer of 86. Bruno can still go. He looked great. And the blood between Savage and Tito showed their hatred in a spotlight way, that those are the two guys that bleed. So I thought this was tremendous. I went 4 stars here. Loved it. Loved the match. It was a great way to wrap everything up. What'd you think, Scott?
I gave this 4 stars. I think the thing for me, since we started this journey, is that I've gained so much respect for more respect than I already had for Tito. Because you're looking at three guys with unbelievable charisma in Adonis, Savage, and Bruno. And Tito, who you never, I mean, just at this, on the surface, you never thought was that kind of guy. He fit in like a glove in this match and in this feud. And I was blown away at how he fit right in with this brawl and how he was not overwhelmed by the charisma that was in that ring. It was a nice testament to how great Bruno still was, even in his, at that point, what, probably early 50s?
Yeah.
And he still had it. He still had it in the sense that he knew what to do, when to do it.
Yeah.
And what a combo Savage and Adonis are, though, right? I mean, just two guys who figured it out and got it. And even, I mean, Adonis, don't forget, a little, obviously much more experienced than Savage, but he just was such a perfect complement. It was just so awesome, and to have them caged in, made it 10 times better. Fun brawl. Your official time 9:51. Didn't need to be longer. Perfectly fine with the way it was, and I'm just so impressed in how much more I've liked Tito, in this run. Mm. As a matter of fact, you know, of course, we're doing the greatest WWE wrestler of all time project. This show is getting me to move Tito up my meter in my top 100, because he's just been incredible and fitting in perfectly with three guys who obviously have more charisma than he does. He did not seem lost whatsoever. On a side note, there's obviously at the time such a thing as TV cage and house show cage, because obviously this is our first televised cage match here since WrestleMania 2, and we're back to the cool mesh cage and we didn't have the bars cage. But because this was local TV, fuck it, who cared? You know what I mean? Again, another match. What a 1-2 punch to end the show. We've had some real stinkers. We've had scumbag Tony Garea, but unprofessional. You know, Kel, and on a side note, I understand your point, but fuck it. You know, Harley Race is 7-time world champion. Do what needs to be done and shut up with your stupid fucking hair. Harley's hair is better. So the mutton chops. No. But this was... I was just amazed at how all of this charisma fit into such an incredible match. And the crowd was just through the roof. Through the roof. Made up for all the fuck-ups to this point on this show, and there were a couple of them, a few of them. But my number one point to make is so impressed with Tito and how he fit in with these other guys in this stretch and has helped me kind of appreciate him more and has moved him up my list a little bit for the top 100. On a side note, 4 stars. Unbelievable. Kel?
Yeah. I love this match. One of the classics of the era, really. But underrated because it happened on an MSG show. A lot of fans don't see this and don't know how great it was. And it's the end, the final chapter in what was a 5-show feud between Tito and Savage that builds and builds. I just love it because each match adds a new element. You know, you have the first match, and then the second match is no DQ with the referee screwing up. So you have to get Bruno involved, and then Adonis gets involved, and then you have a tag match between the 4 guys. And then now here, finally, we're at the end. We're in a cage at MSG. It doesn't get any better. The true main event, it's the very last match. It's not a middle-of-the-card main event. Yeah, just awesome. Blood. Brawling Bruno, yeah, like you said, Scott, and JR, just still great. I love the guy. I love Tito. I love Savage. And Adonis is a great wrestler, too. I mean, he's climbing to the top of the cage and does a friggin' leap. Unreal. And I've bashed Adonis in previous shows, saying he's got nothing left, but he clearly did have some left and was great in this match too. I've raved about this match on podcasts before. It's everybody should see it, but everybody should see the whole feud, all 5 matches, because it tells a great story, and it's super underrated. It's under discussed, and it should be looked at by more people and discussed by more people. And yeah, I went 4 stars too. Yeah, like I said, one of the great matches of the era.
Right, I think a lot of people too. I know I always did. Just figured Tito lost to Savage and then was done because you just always assume Savage went into the Steel feud and that was it for Tito, and he never, like, you don't realize that they feuded for another 5 months after this. You know, they kept going.
Yeah,
it seemed like it was just kind of a one-time thing, and that was it.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, all right. Any final thoughts on Bruno? you know, we didn't see him a ton in '85, but I really enjoyed his 86 stuff. Like, I think it's been super impressive. I think he's been one of the most over and best workers we've seen in some of these shows. And again, I still stand by my point that I would have done him and Savage at WrestleMania 2 and then started the Steel stuff later. I think it could have really helped prop up that show. It would have popped New York. I think they could have had a great match. We've seen that Bruno has a lot in the tank, and it would have been a natural progression for this feud. So I've really enjoyed seeing him. I'm going to miss him being around. I mean, I guess he's still around, right? Because he does commentary. We just won't see him on any of these shows. Okay. So either of you have any final thoughts on Bruno?
Yeah, I mean, I love Bruno. I've raved about him for years now. This era of Bruno it's so fun because he's older and he gets to interact with all the new guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all these fresh feuds. He does stuff with Piper. He does stuff with Savage, two of the best heels of the time. And he doesn't feel out of place at all. And he was a master. He was a master of psychology, storytelling. Bruno's super underrated as a wrestler. A lot of people get hung up on the punch kick stuff, but he was more than just a mindless brawler. He put a lot of thought behind all, you know, everything that went into his matches. And yeah, it's too bad that he didn't work the garden much more or at all. Because I want to see more Bruno, but this is a fitting end, you know, at the house that he built in a steel cage, in a hot feud with Blood, and going out on top with a huge pop at the end. It's a pretty fitting end for Bruno as a wrestler at MSG.
How about you, Sky? Final on Bruno?
He's the Brune. What can you say? He still had it, not just from an in-ring perspective, but he knew the crowd. He knew that building. He just knew it.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen a Bruno Savage multi-show run. Why the hell not?
I mean, it was WrestleMania. I still think that could have been the perfect fit for that show.
Yeah. You almost feel like Bruno was wasted in Chicago, at that in that battle royal.
Yeah, stupid.
Yeah, and then you had to deal with the fuck another asshole doing the in the title match. But I'm happy to say that I was that you and I were in the building the next 28 years later when he actually was in the building the next time in this building, and he was my dad's favorite wrestler, so I was I always had a soft spot for him anyway, and he's the Brun. And he, I think he's around till, I think he does.
Definitely into 87.
Yeah, he definitely does. When Championship Wrestling morphs into Superstars, I think he does it into like February, I think. And then he's gone.
No, he's there to just before WrestleMania 4, actually. But his run as a color commentator is pretty unremarkable because he hardly ever says anything. Like he's
kind of does like the replays and stuff, right? He's like a.
Yeah, it's Vince, Jesse, and him, and Vince and Jesse, especially Jesse, do most of the talking.
Oh, yeah, he does go into 88. I feel like he left in 87. You're right, he does go into 88, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, his final match was teamed with Hogan on a show in Balt against One Man Gang and King Kong Bunny, the only time they ever teamed. And that was
cool, that'd have been, huh?
Yeah, and it too bad it wasn't taped, unfortunately. But
idiots.
Yeah. That was
have that tag team wrestle the Garden? I mean, come on.
I know. It's strange, but that's...
I mean, if they were feeling at the time that he wasn't selling the Garden, I mean, how do you not put that team together?
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
Love the Brun. Shame.
All right, why don't we do some awards here to wrap things up, and then we'll read some feedback, and we'll get out of here. I think match of the night, pretty self-evident tonight. Everyone on board the cage?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
All right, for worst match, I know, Scott, you gave the dud to Harley and Gurria. That was so short. I thought Morales Sharp was worse per capita for how lengthy it was. I thought that match was worse, but I can be swayed. What do you guys have?
No, that Gurria thing's a shit show. No, it's a piece of fucking trash, and he's an asshole.
Jesus.
Worst match.
I'm going.
I know it was only 2 minutes, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was a squash match. It was a total squash.
But it was just an insult of a squash.
What are you going with, Kelly?
I'm going with Billy Jerkanes, as Bobby Heenan always called him, against Brutus Beefcake.
Three way, huh?
And it wasn't even that bad, but. Yeah. There wasn't really, for me, there wasn't a standout dud, horrible match on this card, actually.
All right. Okay, MVP. I went with everyone in the main event. I know it's kind of a cop-out, but I just thought they were all awesome. Like, I can't pick just one. What do you think, Cal?
I went with Tito Santana because he's been a constant in all these cards. I don't think anyone's picked him as an MVP yet, but he's been great. And, you know, this was the end. And he was great in this match. He blades, which he actually very rarely bladed. So he went the extra mile in this one. He's, you know, the big finish with him knocking Savage off the cage, and he gets to go over the top. And he kind of gets to win this feud against Savage. You know, he didn't get the IC belt back, but in the final match, he's victorious. And, yeah, Tito's a great wrestler, and I think he's worthy. This is kind of like an MVP accumulated after quite a few shows, but I'm going with Tito for this one.
What'd you have, Scott?
We actually gave him MVP with Pete back in March. Huh.
Okay.
The March house show, we gave Tito MVP. I want to cop out with you too, JR, because all four guys were great. I feel like I should support Kelly on Tito since I, you know, dumped unbelievable and well-deserved praise when I was talking about the main event. So I'm going to go with Tito, too.
Okay, that's fine. I can get on board with that. I'm not going to argue it. All right, our Uncle Elmer for the worst performer of the evening. I went with Tony Gurria. Yeah.
Fuck that jerk.
Okay. Billy Jerkanes for me.
I would be the distance.
Oh, so, Kelly, I'm starting to understand you like unprofessional New Zealanders then, huh? With fine haircuts.
He's the only one. The hair, I mean, I'll never give a first worker. The hair and the tattoos and, yeah, the accent. He was pretty good.
All right.
Okay.
Best moment. I originally, for a while, had penciled in Tonga slamming Stud because I thought the crowd went nuts again for that. But
I had that.
Is that what you had?
I had that too, yeah.
I'm going to go with the finish of the main event, though. I thought the culmination of the feud, Tito going over the top, Bruno sprinting to the door as Savage Adonis flopped around, perfectly paid off the show in that whole angle.
What do you have? Mean, I loved Adonis like Humpty Dumptying the top rope. that was pretty fun. I'll go on board with the cage match. But I did like Tonga. That would have given us Tonga Stud two straight shows as best moment. So I'll separate it here. I can't argue the end of the cage match. It was pretty good.
Would you like, Kelly?
And yeah, same thing.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Next up then is our last one is our Junior Mr. Universe Award. I went with the Bulldogs. I feel like they're usually the choice when they're around.
I think we should give it to Mr. Junior, Mr. Universe himself.
You think so? I thought the Bulldogs looked bigger than Atlas here. I don't know.
Are you serious?
Yeah. What'd you think?
Really? You think so?
Well, he's now weighing 270 pounds, so he dropped some mass. Maybe he's off the gas. No, I'm going with my second ever Triple Crown winner, and the first was Ted Arcidi. The second is Billy Jerk Haynes. Yeah, that's the third award for him tonight for me.
Wow, we're all over the place on this one. All right, Scott, what'd you have for a grade?
This was a decent show. It got better as it got along. If we stopped at, say, Gurria and Harley, I maybe would have given it a lower grade than I gave last month's show. And I gave last month's show pretty horrendous grade. But these last two picked it up for me. And the Battle Royal was good. I'm going to give it a 5.5.
Oh, okay. You mean like that's low. 5.5. No, but I mean, good. That's pretty good for these house shows. I mean, that's on the high end.
But that tells you how much I loved the last two matches, because other than the Battle Royal, everything before this was not great whatsoever. But those last two matches did it for me, and that was might be our best main event in the building this year. So 5.5. Kel?
I went 6.5. That's my second highest grade ever. My highest was February 86 with the Hogan Savage Lumberjack main event, and also had a couple other good matches. Oh, it had Hearts versus the Bees on that one that I really liked. So this one, you know, it went by pretty fast, you know, breezy. I never felt as down as I have on some of these shows, especially the previous month's show. And there was, you know, the Battle Royal. Yep, that's definitely a match that people should watch. It was fun. And the Dog and Valentine had a decent match. The Bulldogs and the Moondogs had a decent match. And the cage match, of course, is iconic, pretty much. So, yeah, 6.5.
I went with a 6. It was a really fun show. I didn't think there were too many down spots at all. There weren't really any, you know, the only dud, if you want to call it that, was the heart race match. And that was only, you know, 3 minutes. Even the other ones were kept pretty short. Bulldogs, Moondogs, the longest match, and that was fine. I really liked the Battle Royal. I liked the opener. And the last two matches were really good. So, yeah, I would say it's one of the better house shows we've seen.
Yeah.
I had it just a notch behind the May one that we did a few weeks ago. I had that at 6.5. So probably just a little notch behind that, but a really good show. A nice bounce back from last week, which was a disaster. So that was good. All right, just a few bits of feedback we'll read here. Of course, you can contribute the feedback each and every Monday at PlaceMeNation.com. If you go into the comments of Steve Riddle's PlaceMeNation Vintage Vault previewing, you can put your comments there or share them on social media. We will read them on air each and every episode, just like the old days. So here we go. Half an Onion Loaf checks in, our old friend from the message board, Steve. I remember talking about matches like this back on the old board. What a fantastic blow off to this feud. It's brutal, fast paced, and doesn't overstay its welcome by being protracted into a self-indulgent epic. Considering the stipulation, this is as long as it should be and puts over the brutality as everyone looks exhausted from a redneck dirt in the face bar brawl. Adonis is the MVP thanks to his excellent bumping. He really did escape well as the scapegoat. As the scapegoat in this feud to protect Savage. Brian Bayless, of course, dumped all over Tony Gurria, and you can read his review of the show. He has it linked in there as well. Greg DeFore says, Jimmy Hart winning the Battle Royal is the greatest thing ever. Valentine commented on this before. He said, when you left the event, what would make you want to tell your friends more who didn't go? Greg Valentine winning the Battle Royal or Jimmy Hart? So I think it's a great point is there as well. Yeah. And finally, our buddy Johnny D'Amato says, Adrian Adonis and his splendid purple breaks the all-time MSG record for most pounds crashing from the top of a steel cage. Gorilla couldn't resist a shot at Adrian, saying he always wanted to be a soprano when Bruno abused his groin with the ring ropes. So there you go. Bring your feedback to us. We'll read it each and every week right here, Place to Be Podcast. We won't be here next week. Of course, it is St. Mary's weekend, like we mentioned. We always take that week after off because we need to recap or regroup or recover. So we will take next week off. We'll be back 2 weeks from tonight on July 31st with the August 25th house show. Kelly will be here in the house. And then 2 weeks from tonight on August 7th, Mr. D'Amato will be back for the big event. So those are your next two shows, and then we'll go forward from there. Also want to tell everyone to check out the latest Jeff Learns Wrestling. We're right around this era as well. We talked about, had him watch Tito versus Savage from February. We watched some stuff from WrestleMania 2, and we get into the Hogan-Orndorff turn and feud as well. So check that out. And, of course, Letters from Center Stage each and every Friday. We have a really fun interview. I'm going to keep it as a surprise for not this week's episode, but next week's episode. Be sure to check that out. It's a quick, breezy listen, always just about an hour each and every Friday that drops. So be sure to check those out. Scott, you got anything going on this week?
We do. We have the coming up this week. Not sure which day, but we will have the newest episode of the main event. We will preview Battleground. We'll talk about Raw tonight and the revelations. And I think Pete's going to join us, and he and the Godfather will talk a little TNA, some other stuff, and the G1 Climax tournament began, so we'll get into that as well this week, a couple
That's
days old.
That's different than the McG1 Climax that we attended last weekend.
So fresh main event will be up later in the week.
Kel, anything you got going on?
Well, I've recorded two shows now with Will and guests for the For Your Consideration podcast on Place to Be Nation. I'm not sure when they're dropping. I think
every other week they're rolling out. He's got a bunch canned. So
I think he has 12 in the can, or maybe not that many. I think he's done 12 and 4 been released or 5.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. But yeah, that's something to look forward to because I had a blast on both of them.
Yeah, they're really fun listens. If you haven't checked out yet, there's, like Kelly said, there's four that are out already. The latest one was on the Attitude Era with Steve Williams and Johnny Sorrow, which was a great listen. They did a really nice job covering that era, especially considering how much Will hates it. I thought they did a good job of covering those guys.
Yep.
I agree. More to come.
And plenty with the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Project. Be sure to join our Facebook group or just visit PlaceNation.com for updates. The discussion's hot and heavy. Want you to all submit lists, and of course that'll be wrapping up toward year end. But you have plenty of time to do research, look into guys you may not be very aware of, watch stuff like we're watching, help build cases, help make cases, help argue for against. Check out all of our pod blasts and written pieces and podcasts all across our networks, whether it's the Placement Nation Wrestling feed, Placement Nation Pop, or Pro Wrestling Only. Subscribe to all three of those feeds, rate us, and leave feedback as well. So for Kelly, for Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Everyone have a great St. Mary's weekend. I know I will. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Everyone take care.
Yes, we will.
Like a rock.
Like Maven's rock.
Like Junkyard Dog's rock.
I can see through forests, I can